Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie ahead, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, doing great. Just enjoying some endless rain down here in Louisiana. How about yourself?
Well, I saw that picture you put up on Facebook of the guy walking his fish. So, are you getting the flooding, or is it just kind of swampier than usual kind of a thing you got going on there?
There's flooding. It's been raining for days, and you know, we get that sometimes in Louisiana, and it's just it almost feels like monsoon season. You know, in Forrest Gump, one day it started raining and it rained for 6 months. Well, it feels a little bit like that.
Like that in Louisiana. Well, you know, spring is on the way, so you'll get warmer, progressively warmer rain. I think that's
right.
Have to look forward to there. Well, we're enjoying a few days of near, almost spring-like weather. I say this knowing that April will be, as it always is in Colorado, our snowiest month. So I've got that to look forward to. But hey, enough about the weather. I've got a great topic for you. Let's talk about a trip to Mars. What do you say? We've got a fantastic guest joining us this evening. We're very pleased to welcome Sabrina Surovec. Sabrina was born in Houston, and she moved to Austin to attend the University of Texas, where she graduated with a bachelor's degree in music. During that time, she spent a summer abroad in Germany studying music and neuroscience and discovered a love for travel. She's since visited over 25 countries and ended up living in Japan for the past 13 years, where she has recently become a permanent resident of Japan. She's currently the co-founder of an online English teaching company, and she also works as a professional musician and photographer in the Japanese music industry. She's always had a love for knowledge, particularly about space, and a desire to visit the ISS or participate in some kind of space tourism once it becomes more readily available. Some of the reasons that she had decided to apply for the Mars One mission, and she is, of course, a finalist, one of the Mars 100. Sabrina, welcome to The World Transformed.
Hi.
We're thrilled to have you with us. You know, one of 100 people who has been picked potentially to go to Mars. We want to get into all of that, but I thought we would start maybe if we just let's do a little bit of backup. Can you give us some background on what Mars One is? What's it all about?
Well, Mars One's primary goal is to build a colony on Mars, and hopefully a self-sustaining colony where we'll be growing our own food, creating our own governments, our own culture, and hopefully being able to apply some of the things we learn there to Earth as well.
And it's a nonprofit headquartered in the Netherlands. I think people really started hearing about them probably about, what, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, they were founded in, I want to say, 2011.
Okay.
And 2013 was when they started the astronaut candidacy program.
So people from all over the world applied.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many candidates they had, but obviously it was more than 100. You know, it must have been
something like 200,000, I think, but maybe only about half those actually completed the application process to begin with. And then from there, it was just steady cuts all the way down to 100.
And now there's 100.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, By 2024, there will be four, right?
Right.
So, one of my questions, and I guess we can get to it. We know, you know, if we look at how Mars One is intended to unroll, first there's going to be some unmanned activity, I believe. Then the first mission with a crew of four, and then the plan is to send another crew of four every 2 years. Is that right?
That's right.
Indefinitely, or is there a, you know, is there a window on that, or do they eventually become 8-person missions, or do they say we got enough people on Mars, or how does that unfold?
I think that the optimum amount of people that you can send for the price and for the time that it takes to train everyone is about four. So each crew will probably continue to be a group of four, but the idea is the initial crew, of course, will have to double up on specialties to make sure, you know, to cover redundancy in case something should happen to one of us. But future crews will be able to become more specialized in their training. So once we've established a base, perhaps we'll have, you know, someone who comes up and specifically works in dentistry or specifically works in geology and so on.
Right, right. Yeah, well, but, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say, I think there's no cutoff as far as how long they intend to keep sending people up there. I mean, eventually we want to establish a colony, so I assume people will at some point be having children up there, or maybe they'll be sending up married couples, I'm not sure.
Right. Well, you know, the thing about starting a colony with four people is, you know, that's a start, but then there's really a lot of logistics into that. And ideally, other people will be sending people to Mars too, and there will be multiple communities living on Mars by then, perhaps.
Yeah. Hopefully.
if all goes well. Now, if you're in the running for the first mission, and say you're not selected, okay, just for a moment, let's imagine the impossible, and they pick four people, and you're not one of them. Are you still in the running for the second one, or how does that work?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure that once they've expended the amount of time and money they're going to take to train us, they're probably going to keep a core group of what they consider 24 people who are ready to go at any time. And of those groups, there'll be six groups of four. And they'll be choosing based on the television results, and also based on our performance, who will be the first group to go. And the others will be remaining in backup.
Sabrina,
go ahead, Stephen.
I was just going to remark at the website Mars1.com, it shows a string of capsules linked together. Is that the idea? I mean, each group of four comes down and what would amount to a large capsule, larger than the lunar lander, and hook up like that? Is that the idea at present?
Yeah, those capsules that you're seeing are actually the life support units and the other, like, supply units. So the living unit is actually an inflatable that's quite large and elongated, and that part will actually be buried about 5 meters under the surface because we need protection from radiation.
Right.
So, I mean, what you're seeing is going to be the outer exterior where we'll be exiting to do EVAs and such. But, those, basically you'll see a string of those, and for every six capsules you'll see two elongated inflatables that'll be the living unit.
And what's the basic the size on those living units? How big will they be?
Oh, they're quite big, 200 square meters, I believe.
Oh, okay. All right. So
not bad.
That's
quite a lot of space, you know, considering that we'll be in a tiny transit vehicle on the way there. So
it'll seem very, very roomy after after being in that capsule. For how long? How long is the trip going to take?
It's at this current rate, it'll be about 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if there are delays in the program and meeting expectations, then it gets pushed back. We'll be missing our window of opportunity for a fast transit. So what will happen then is, of course, the journey will just get longer.
And the idea is, as with unmanned probes that we've sent to Mars in the past, what you do is you basically you launch a craft into solar orbit that intercepts with the orbit of Mars, right, is the idea. You're just orbiting to Mars. Is that the idea?
Yeah. They're actually constructing the habitats in space, so we'll be leaving from low orbit. We won't be leaving from Earth, technically. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right. So you get into low Earth orbit, and the craft that's going to take you to Mars actually departs from there.
Right. Yeah. We'll be exchanging out with the assembly crew who is there putting everything together. They'll get back in the capsule and go back home, and we will take off.
Oh, wow.
That is cool.
So the assembly crew, will they come from the group of 100?
No, I guess they'll be technical specialists that are hired outside our group. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, it's just an amazing, ambitious, wonderful plan. as I'm sure you know, some people are highly skeptical about Mars One.
Yeah, definitely.
I was surprised to see, actually, when I went to the Wikipedia page on Mars One, I don't know why I went there in particular, because I was reading the Mars One page and I was reading some of their sources, but I went to the Wikipedia page, and it's like, it just starts out saying is a highly criticized. I'm like, well, come on, give me a break. I mean, when do we ever say that in the introductory paragraph about something?
Exactly.
So I followed the footnotes and I said, okay, well, yeah, there have been some criticisms, definitely. And in fact, Robert Zubrin, who's been a guest on not this program but on Fast Forward Radio, what this show used to be, author of The Case for Mars, they quoted him extensively on criticizing not really the plan to go so much as the business model. He had issues with the business model. And then it says, kind of in smaller print below that, oh, and then he subsequently became an advisor to the project. So I wonder if persistence is maybe eating away at some of the skepticism.
I hope so. I mean, I think it's just, you know, with the media these days, I think it's really popular just to be cynical to begin with. So I kind of think it's a nice breath of fresh air to have some optimism for the future like this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm behind it. I'll be disappointed, of course, if it doesn't go through, because I'm really excited about it. But, I mean, with every space program, there are setbacks. So, I mean, I don't expect it to be 100% perfect.
Well, you know, they made light of it, Sabrina, last week in Big Bang Theory, but it was, you know, that's kind of high profile, and quite humorously done, and I think where they showed Sheldon submitting his video to be a part of this, and I have every expectation that your video would be a lot less crazy than his, but it was I'm sure.
Are you setting the bar kind of low, aren't we? Yes.
Yeah, very very low. My apologies. I guess what I'm trying to say was just a high profile for the program, and I hope some people looked a little deeper and saw that, hey, this is a real thing. It's not just a fictional thing for the show. Yeah.
I think we've been mentioned on two shows now. I can't remember what the other one was, though.
Oh, another network TV show mentioned the Mars One. Well, you're going to get, I think you know, this is just the early days. People are going to be talking about this quite a bit. And the great thing is, even an idea that gets poked at on Big Bang Theory has now been discussed on Big Bang Theory. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like,
that's
a huge thing. And, of course, they couldn't pick Sheldon and Sabrina because only one from Texas, I think, at the most.
I don't want too many Texans.
Yeah, you know, there's a limit to how many Texans they can take. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I thought that was really interesting. In the breakdown of the 100 finalists I was reading on the Mars One site, it said that there were so many, you know, obviously half and half, men and women, so many people from this continent, so many people from that continent, et cetera, this many people from the Americas, this many people from Europe, and on and on. How are you counted, right? Since you're an American, but you live in Japan, which continent are you representing?
I'm not sure. I changed my from on the website to Japan because people were contacting me from America wanting to do in-person interviews, and it's just not possible for me. So I thought it might be better for me to change it to Japan so people know where I'm actually located.
Right.
We used to have on the form some place to say where we were from and where we currently reside, but they changed it so that the only part that shows publicly is the where we're from. So I went ahead and changed it to Japan, especially since I'm a permanent resident now anyway. So.
Right. So, you know, you've got this kind of citizen of the world status, as it were.
So.
If they tell you, now you're there, as, you know, one of the representatives of America versus Asia? How, you know, does that change your feelings about it one way or another? Or, you know, does it give you a different spin on the whole thing one way or another? Or how does that impact it for you?
No, not really. For me, one of the major appeals about it is actually the diversity of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's kind of a utopian ideal that we'll build some perfect society up on Mars. I mean, I don't expect it'll be perfect, but I really do hope that it helps to undo things like institutional racism and sexism. And I think that part of the international process of selection is going to help that a lot.
Well, it's certainly a far cry from any astronaut selection process that's ever occurred before. I think you can safely say that. Now, something I should mention that I realized, I put that picture up earlier today that showed, I don't know if you saw that, the three headshots. It was Valentina Tereshkova, Sally Ride, and yourself. Okay,
oh.
So I'm giving you the, right, first woman in space, first U.S. woman in space, and potentially first woman on Mars. But I really shouldn't have done that. It occurs to me that it should really be like Yuri Gagarin, Neil Armstrong, and you, right? Because it's potentially not just first woman on Mars, but first human being on Mars. You could be, right? I mean, that's what this is really about. I mean, I don't know how you guys are going to decide who gets to step out of the capsule first. But
whoever the commander is, I guess, if it runs the same way as NASA.
Exactly. Yeah, but I would say there's a 50-50 shot that first person on Mars is going to be a woman.
I'll be fighting for the first step.
Neil Armstrong actually had to step over Buzz Aldrin to get out of the capsule.
Yeah. Poor Buzz.
Buzz was ticked, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Interesting company it puts, the four who were picked and the one who finally makes it, assuming that this actually does become the first manned mission to Mars. I mean, that's pretty heady company to be in. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. And you've put me in rather esteemed company up there with Sally Ride too. Thanks.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, and you'll be there. Yeah, you know, go into space, and you're right up there with her. Now, let's wind it back a little bit and talk about. You heard about this thing and you decided to sign up for it. I know we read a little about that in your bio, but what caught your attention and said, yeah, that's it, I got to try to get into this Mars thing?
Actually, a friend of mine on Facebook posted an article about it that was, I mean, he knew about my interest in space, and like the final item on my bucket list was basically, you know, go to space.
Was this Jeb, by any chance? Was it Jeb?
No, it wasn't, actually.
Okay. That's a check.
Although I would expect it, yeah.
We always reference Jab live anytime we get a chance.
He'll be happy.
Makes him blush. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
The article that I read was extremely negative. It was one of the typical critical argument ones. And I found myself kind of mentally refuting it even as I was reading it. And I didn't even know anything about the Mars One program, but just the way they were talking about it, I knew that they really didn't understand much about the science of space travel and life in space. So I thought, well, I might as well check out their official site and see what they have to say about it. And went and looked at that and thought, well, you know, this is a big decision to make to literally leave everything behind, so I think I'll sleep on it. And that night I tried to sleep and I couldn't sleep. So I got up pretty much in the middle of the night. Well, I mean, I was laying there both terrified and excited because, you know, I'm thinking about all the horrible ways I could die in space with, you know, a couple of millimeters of metal between me and vacuum.
Right.
And 7 months of that, too. And I thought, you know, well, one of the major parts of being an astronaut is trust in your team. And I thought, if I can do that, then everything will be fine because people are sinking a lot of time and money and effort into this, and they're not just going to shoot us up there to let us die, you know, without some kind of effort. And I'm sure every precaution will be made to take care of us. And I thought, well, you know what? I can do that. So I actually got up out of bed in the middle of the night and, well, in the morning for me since I'm a night shifter, and I signed up.
And the rest is history. What criteria were listed for you as a candidate? What did it say you had to be or couldn't be, or, you know, what's the job description look like?
The original criteria, I believe, was really simple, just that you be a legal adult in your territory and that you speak English or will be able to speak English fluently by the end of the training and that you're in good health. So those were the three requirements for the initial sign-up. Then once you signed up, you had to make a video explaining. I think they asked everybody three different questions. One was, why should we consider you for Mars, for the Mars One program? And one was, describe your sense of humor, and which, of course, was important to, you know, the psychology and the makeup of the crew.
Right.
Especially if it's just going to be stuck together for 7 months in a tin can, essentially. So, I can't remember what the other question was. I think it might have been something about one of the challenges you face and how you overcame it or something like that.
Okay.
But that was 2 years ago, so I can't remember.
Sure. Well, whatever it was, obviously you gave them an answer they liked.
I guess so.
And so they narrowed down the finalists based on the videos, or were there, you know, other tests you had to take? Were there medical tests, anything like that?
We also had a lot of essays we had to write. I want to say it was at least 10 to 20 questions, really in-depth about our background and our history. A lot of the typical kind of things you'd see on, like, a job resume, you know, what are some of your weaknesses, and what kind of people do you get along with, what kind of people do you not get along with, describe some challenges and stressful situations that you've faced. I think probably living abroad helped that decision as well. It seems like the majority of the candidates are from one country and live in another.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were already trying to psychologically profile us for whether or not we're used to being away from our families and friends. So,
right.
And I've been here for more than 13 years now, so I'm definitely used to it.
I saw in one of the articles, what was it? What publication was it? I can't remember now, that highlighted three of the 100. One of them is a mother with two, like, teenage daughters.
Surprised me.
Yeah, and she's talking about going on what's described as a one-way trip. Now, is it technically a one-way trip, or, you know, is there a possibility of going back home, or are you there on Mars to stay if all goes well?
Well, the idea is that we stay, but, assuming that technology improves in the future, there may indeed be some way back. But I think the idea is, you have to stay because, especially at the outset, you've got a crew of four, and you really need each other to survive because we'll each be trained with a separate skill set. So, we're doubling up a bit, but still, that's not really a very good assurance when there's only four of you up there. Even when there's only eight or, 12 or, say, 16, it's still pretty dangerous, I think. And another concern, of course, is that the way the gravity will affect us after we've been there so long, we would probably feel somewhat like a beached whale if we came back to the Earth's gravity.
Oh, right.
Because it's only 38% of Earth's gravity on Mars. And, of course, we'll have been in complete weightlessness for about 7 months before we arrive there even.
Yeah, so Mars is going to be hard on you when you first get there. It's the old, after you live in the tropics, you can't come back to a cold climate, right? This is worse than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because your body will, I presume, really just adjust to that. What'd you say, 38%?
38%, right.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Let me ask about the infrastructure. Is some of this going to be put in place robotically before any human sets foot on Mars? Like, Yeah, go ahead.
The idea is that they'll send, a total of 8 missions before we ever even set foot in the rocket. So they will have tested this time and again to ensure safety protocols. But also the rovers that will go up there will be assembling parts of the living units and the supply units and the life support units for us. So we should have a minimal amount of preparation to do when we arrive.
Okay.
You know,
okay. So
I think of. Go ahead, Stephen. I'm sorry.
I was thinking also. I mean, obviously, a big part of this would be growing your own food, and I presume that would be done underground as well. Would you be, using grow lights? I hate to get into minutiae specifics, but it fascinates me how you would go about that.
Oh, yeah. Everything will be grown hydroponically, and they'll be using only the spectrum of light that is suitable for each plant. So certain plants grow better under green light or blue light or, you know, such. So they'll be using LEDs, I believe, to conserve energy as well.
Now, was it a requirement that you be a vegetarian to go on this, or that's
not
taken care of by virtue of being in the mission?
Oh, yeah, well, when we arrive, we'll have to be, but, I'm pretty much purely carnivore right now, so it is going to be a big change. That probably butter will be the biggest thing that I miss.
Oh, yeah. Things you'll miss living on Mars, butter. Interesting that would be on the list, but I can imagine, absolutely. What will you do on Mars, you know? I mean, obviously survive is going to be the first order of business. You got to live. You're going to have to produce your food and keep yourselves alive. But then, assuming that that's 80% of your time, what'll the other 20% of the time be? What's life going to be like on Mars?
Well, it's projected that we'll have time for regular leisure time, just like we would on Earth. You know, you put in your work day and then you have time off. During that time, we can, you know, pursue our own interests or even do our own experiments. We'll be doing a lot of exploration and, you know, furthering experiments from the Earth. People will probably request that we, you know, do certain kinds of research up there. Geological explorations, of course, searching for life would be a big thing to do.
Yes, you know, anything you can find to, or you know, fossils, right? Signs of signs of life that was there.
Even if it showed that it was there at one point, that would be something. So.
All the stuff that NASA scientists looking at readings presented to us by these magnificent robots all these years have said, if I could just walk over there, you know.
Right, yes.
Yeah. If I could just pick that one up, I think there might be something there, and now people will be able to do it.
I follow that Curiosity feed on Twitter, and it drives me crazy. I'm looking at all these pictures and, I want to go see what that is. Well,
exactly. I want somebody to find that.
Exactly.
I'm imagining doing this interview, an interview like this, Sabrina, when you're on Mars and we're here on Earth. Obviously, basically we would ask you a question and then go watch a movie, have a cup of coffee, because what is the round trip time of us getting a question to you and you getting an answer back to us?
I think the average is about 20 minutes.
Yeah. So, okay. Not too bad.
But I think I've been looking into a lot of the research. NASA's doing a lot of research now with laser transmission, and they're able to send real-time video conversations and 3 minutes worth of data for every pass that they make. So I think that will be a big improvement if that happens in the 10 years before we get up there.
That'll be cool. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's still a, you know, speed of light limitation to how fast you're going to be able to move information. There's definitely going to be a lag.
But the bandwidth, there's lots of lag, but increasing the bandwidth. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So let's talk a little more about, first off, the process that got you to where you are. So they picked these 100 finalists. How did you find out that you were one? What did you get a call? Was there an email? What happened?
Yeah, email notification. We had the second round. We had to go through a medical check, so I think that eliminated quite a few people actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the interviews. I think there we were down to about 663 people for the live Skype interviews, and we had 15 minutes to talk and answer 3 random questions that they asked us about all the material they'd sent. So we had to memorize a lot of scientific facts and facts about the mission and mission priorities, how things worked, the technology, or the technology to be in some cases. And so we had 3 questions we had to answer, and then some bonus questions, I guess, I got because I answered mine really quickly.
You got the bonus questions.
Yeah, and we had to wait about 2 weeks. Actually, my interview was, I think, second to last because I was getting my wisdom teeth out a couple weeks before, so I definitely didn't want to schedule it during that time.
Mm. Well, better to get that taken care of before you go to Mars.
Exactly.
That's hard to – you think it's hard to schedule here.
Yes.
Well, I thought Having seen the movie Castaway, you definitely want to get that done before you go.
Yes.
Get the dental work done where there's some kind of infrastructure. I think we can all agree on that. That's definitely the way to go. Now, between now and 2024, this is a long ramp-up time, right? We're talking 9 years between now and launch.
Right.
What will you all be doing?
Well, the full training program will be 8 years.
Okay.
So this year they're going to start weeding us out even further until they choose the final 24. And once they've got the final 24 of us, then we actually will begin our training in earnest. We'll be living, part of the year we'll be living in the simulation unit to, I guess, you know, they'll throw problems at us and see how we deal with it and see how we get along, of course, you know, in such a small space. And the simulation outpost will be very close to what we'll be living in on Mars. And while we're living there, they will delay all of our transmissions by 20 minutes just to simulate the time delay.
Oh, wow.
And basically everything that we have to do and everything that we'll experience as close as possible will be simulated there.
How about simulating the trip? Will there be just a period of time in close quarters with other people, you know, like
six months with other people? It won't be 6 months, but I think they're definitely going to throw us together for at least some amount of time just to see, you know, how we do with tension and stress and taking it out on each other or not.
Yeah, it's interesting that it sounds like, and I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that, but based on what you've said, it sounds like an awful lot of the screening, an awful lot of the qualification has to do with kind of the psychological profile, right?
Oh,
the overall fit of the person, and less really on the physical aspects, although I'm sure that factors in too, right? They don't want to bring somebody with a heart condition or, you know, something like that. Now, what kind of physical training will occur to get you ready to go to Mars?
Well, I'm imagining, you know, having what I know from NASA's training system, we'll probably be doing a lot of military survival, like Arctic survival, desert survival, probably water survival.
Hmm.
I imagine, you know, we'll have to do a lot of physical training. I've already started 2 years ago when I applied. I said, you know, I need to make a change, and I started going to the gym 2 or 3 times a week, hitting the weight machines and the free weights. So I think that's going to be a part of it, too, is just doing a lot of exercise every day to build up muscle and bone because, of course, we'll experience a lot of muscle and bone density loss while we're in space.
Right, so bulk it up as big as you can before you go. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, and then, you know, by the time you get to Mars, where it's still going to be problematic, at least you've, you know, you've atrophied from a more advanced state, right?
Exactly. If I lose 20% off 120%, then I'm fine.
Exactly, yeah. That's a good strategy. Go ahead, Stephen.
I mean, I can imagine that that on Mars you would be wearing weighted suits probably to help with that. I'm just guessing. Is that in the plan?
I'm not sure either, but I've been reading about MIT's new suit that they've made, a pressure suit, and it's actually a form-fitting suit. It's not gas pressurized like the ones that we currently wear, like the Michelin Man style, you know.
Oh,
right.
This is basically created by tensile strength of the fibers that are woven through the suit, and it just exerts a constant pressure on your skin, so it mimics the Earth's atmosphere.
Oh, okay, so form-fitting but still pressurized.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we'll be using something like that, but it's something that's in the works now, and hopefully if it's developed reasonably by the time we leave, we might adapt that to our own.
Well, you know, the great thing about getting in shape for going to Mars is that once you get there, right, say you can bench, you know, 200 pounds on Earth, right? On Mars, what will that be like? 380, right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Or more.
Even if I come to think of it, it'd be like, 6 that's hard math, but it'd be a lot of weight. The point is, you'd be really strong. I think that's what I was trying to say. I'm sorry, Stephen, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just thinking of other things, like, you know, Mars does have a very thin atmosphere, but very little of it, I'm sure, is oxygen. I mean, I know you carry oxygen with you, and you also depend on plants to help with that, But are we also talking about perhaps getting oxygen from water that's found on Mars, made at the Mars?
Right. Exactly, yeah. Part of the life support unit's process is extracting water from the soil. and parts of that will be stored as water, and parts will be stored as oxygen. And,
right.
of course, you know, hydrogen will be free.
Hydrogen for fuel.
Yeah, they're planning on using that as part of the recycling system.
So, I the spacesuit thing reminded me of something that we forgot to talk about earlier, so I want to swing it back just a little bit. In terms of how you're going to get there, what's going to propel you into low Earth orbit? Have you guys picked a spaceship, or you're hiring somebody's, or you're building one, or how's that part going to work?
We're looking at the SpaceX right now, especially the Dragon capsule.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the Falcon Heavy to get us up there, and the Dragon capsules will form basically what you're seeing, those six pods that you're seeing in the mock-ups of the artwork. Will presumably be Dragon capsules once they've got that under control.
And is SpaceX on board, or is there a deal cut yet, or how's that looking?
I do not know about that, actually. I know that they're in talks right now, so we haven't been told yet about that kind of situation, so I'm not sure.
I think, but
you mentioned propulsion, Phil. I wonder, is the idea going to be chemical rockets all the way to Mars, or is it going to be ion propulsion, or have they thought about that? I guess Falcon Heavy is all rocketry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just regular rocket plants, yeah. Basically,
yeah.
The plan to keep costs down is to use existing technology, so we're not trying to develop anything that will be groundbreaking, essentially, aside from living on Mars, obviously. But the technology that will get us there and get us up to, you know, our exit point will be just the regular rockets that you're seeing these days.
So the craft that actually takes you to Mars would also then use a SpaceX engine or some
right.
other, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird to even use the term conventional rocket, you know, just one of those regular rocket engines.
So conventional, right, that we can go to space.
Yeah,
basically, I mean, the idea is to just use pre-existing technology or technology that will be developed soon and have enough of a testing period to be declared, you know, as safe as possible. Obviously, nothing's going to be completely safe, but, you know.
Well, to me, that's one of the, I think, one of the real strengths of this strategy is to build it on existing technology. When you look at Robert Zubrin's plan to get to Mars, that's what he always said, right? You know, he wanted to use the Saturn V rockets, and they would have been great for that. It would have been a good way to do it. And failing those, the shuttle rockets would have been good. But the point is leverage what exists rather than trying to do something really hard that also requires that you invent a whole bunch of stuff, right? I mean, that just adds to the adds to the reasons why it might not work, I suppose.
Right, and it adds to the cost, it adds to the time, and then, of course, it adds to testing procedures and safety procedures, too. If we're using rockets that are being used for the next 10 years consecutively, then we'll be pretty sure that they're going to be safe enough to send us up there.
Right. Now, if...
Pride and
fruit.
Oh, that
yeah.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah, so... What was I going to say about that? I had a killer thought about the spaceship, and it just left right out of my head. Well, that's okay. We'll come back to it. Hey,
a spaceship would be nice.
what do you think is the rationale for Mars specifically? Right. I mean, this could have been Moon 5 or whatever. Right. It could have been moons of Saturn. It could have been let's go mine the asteroids, or let's build a space station, or it could have been a lot of different things. Why Mars?
I think Mars is the closest analogy to Earth that we have in terms of, you know, relative atmosphere and gravity. I mean, it does have some. It has more gravity than the Moon. The Moon has zero atmosphere, so there's no protection at all from radiation or SPEs, you know, any of that kind of thing. So
right.
I think, and of course, the Martian day is very close to the Earth day. It's 24 hours and 39 minutes. So it's, you know, being able to keep up communications and work schedules and everything, it'll be very similar and easy for us to adapt to, I think.
Okay. So as far as an environment to go to, it's a good one to go to.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm, you know, the moon is not really protected from radiation because of the lack of atmosphere, and Venus, of course, is way too hot. There's no way we could survive there.
Yeah, well.
And even the temperature on Mars during the summer around the equator can be, you know, 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's not too bad, actually.
You know, that could be fairly workable. But whenever we talk about these kind of where to go in the solar system questions, Mars is always right, you know, the top of everybody's list because, hey, Mars. But one of the downsides is it's got a big gravity well, not as big as Earth, but, you know, a fairly sizable gravity well that would be less if you went to the moon, right? If I was going to make a case for the moon, I'd say, well, the moon's a lot closer, and there's less of a gravity well. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be a one-way trip, right? Those would be my arguments for the moon. But, you know, downsides to the moon are many, right? I don't think there's any water up there to speak of.
There is probably, but I think they proved that there was. But it's probably not something that might be sustainable for a long term.
Yeah, I think you might have a hard time getting to it than you will the water on Mars.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about that is you can look at any of those different possible destinations in the solar system, and it's not that one of them is definitely the future in space. They're just each an interesting future in space.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, there's so much exciting stuff being learned about the moons of Saturn, thanks to Cassini here lately, and we've learned so much about the moons of Jupiter, and really, you know, we've just over the last 20 years or so gotten to know the outer solar system a bit, you know, just a little bit, and it seems like there's so much more to see and so much more to know. But the great thing about Mars is, well, that would be kind of a way station on the way out to some of those further destinations.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's the closest in terms of, I mean, obviously not the moon, but it's the closest in terms of a habitable planet. And I mean, it's just another step. Eventually we'll spread out through the solar system, you know, way after my time, I'm sure. But and from there, who knows?
Well,
is there a place?
Oh, go ahead.
Is there a particular part of Mars that is being looked at closely as you know, this looks like an obvious place to put a colony, a polar region, equatorial. What are they thinking?
Yeah, we're looking at the northern hemisphere, equatorial region, somewhere between 40 and 45 degrees north. So basically that was chosen because we would be exposed to the most sunlight there, and the majority of our energy will be generated through solar panels.
Ah.
So we absolutely need as much solar energy as we can get. So they're also looking for relatively flat. Yeah.
You know, downside, I guess, would be you're a long way from the polar ice caps, which would be useful.
Right.
But it's warmer and more sunshine, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, all the water's up in the polar ice caps, I mean, the easily accessible water, but actually the water table doesn't seem to be that deep on Mars, judging by all the drilling that Curiosity's done and a couple of the other probes. So I think it shouldn't be too difficult to extract water, and we'll find out in 2018 when they send it up there and start testing out the technology. So.
Awesome.
Or you could build some canals from the poles down to the sand.
Yeah, but I think that's a bit far for us to travel on our oxygen. So.
I just think canals on Mars, there could be something there. I'm just throwing it out there.
You know, Hallie would say just use the canals that are already there, you know, so.
Well.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, if you don't find any, we'll have to put them there.
Yeah, you might have to build your own if you don't find the ones that Hallie thought that he saw.
Now, is there a long-term plan for Mars One? You know, after a dozen or so of these four-person missions have been, you know, sent up, is there going to be a city on Mars? Will there be terraforming of parts of the planet? You know, what's the grand vision for humanity on Mars?
Well, there's no plans to terraform at the moment because we don't even have that kind of technology now. But assuming that we develop it in the future, I'm sure that will become an option. Right now, the long-term goal is that we become completely self-sufficient as a colony. So we require less supplies from Earth or no supplies from Earth, and we're able to completely carry on by ourselves. So that's the first major goal in the future.
Right. Well, that's accomplishing that will be huge. Absolutely.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know. I want to see some I want to see some artist concepts of cities on Mars, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other idea is that we will learn and have the capability to manage the local ecosystem. Of course, we want to have as minimal an impact as possible. But excuse me, we are hoping to be able to use our knowledge of Martian geology to build our own extra living spaces, maybe underground, developing larger dome structures, perhaps, to support things such as trees, something taller, bigger space.
Right. What if you get there and you do find life? And not just some microbes, but,
Life?
animals, I mean, things that we just didn't expect were there, but it turns out once you get people down there and they get to look around a little bit, there are, I don't know, worms or something, right?
The most amazing thing that had ever happened to me or the history of humanity, actually.
It would be huge, absolutely.
Yeah.
It would be huge. But what would it say about our future on Mars? Would we still be in a position where it would be okay for us to colonize a planet that already had its own life thing going on? Or
in that case, we would have to be extra careful not to contaminate our local environment because, absolutely, it wouldn't be ethical to go up there and just destroy it. I mean, that's not the plan at all. We don't want to strip mine Mars. We're there to make as minimal an impact as possible. So most of our systems and everything will be completely self-contained. And that's the idea. I guess the idea is, of course, if there is any indigenous life there, that we don't want to interfere with it. So, of course, we want to study it.
It would be so cool. I mean, but it seems to me it would say something about our permanent presence there.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe you don't get to build the cities, right? If there's already life there, I think we can still go, but it's not exactly ours for the taking at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean that would make a huge difference in that. I mean, I guess we'd have to establish some kind of prime directive or something.
Right. Right. Well. And Stephen, we've talked about this before. It seems like the good news on Mars might be that there's no life there, right?
Because you can do whatever you like to some extent, but also there's the the whole idea that a sterile Mars means that there's less of a chance of messing things up, really, is the truth. But Stephen Hawking has talked a lot about, recently especially, about his concern of all our eggs in one basket here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And is that really a big part of what's behind this project, is to get humanity on more than one world? Is that the idea? Or
absolutely.
For the survival of the entire species?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely a possibility. I mean, even barring natural disaster, of course. I mean, if you're watching the news these days, it's not exactly all peachy keen.
Right.
It's the idea of not only are we exploring, but we're hopefully creating a better future or even a possible future for mankind. Say a comet or a meteor or anything hits the Earth and destroyed it, where do we all go? Exactly, all our eggs in one basket. So.
This is a new basket, absolutely.
Yeah, new basket.
A new basket. And the great thing is, see, to me, it's a win-win. Okay, if there's life on Mars, awesome. Life on Mars, we found life, and we get to discover life, and that's cool.
Right.
If there's no life on Mars, then we get to be the life on Mars, which is cool,
right,
too. There will be life because we'll have sent 4 people there, and then 8, and then on and on. I remember what I was going to say before. It was talking about the idea of leveraging existing technology to make this happen. One of the critiques I read, I think it was in Wired, they were talking about audacious projects, and they were rating them. They were giving them a plausibility scale, and this one, Mars One, got 2 out of 10 plausibility. Okay.
Yeah, I think I read that article. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. I don't know how everybody else fared, but 2 out of 10. I look at that and I go, okay, wait a minute. If these guys actually have a 20% chance of getting to Mars, that's incredible. Okay, that's pretty amazing. I mean, if you're 1 out of 100.
Yeah.
Of a group that has a 20% chance of going to Mars, you still have a way better chance of going to Mars than anybody else I know.
Exactly.
Okay. Way better.
a lot of the things people say about us not actually having the technology to do it, I think, I mean, I can't imagine why not. We already have people living in space for much longer on the ISS. Obviously, the technology exists. We can keep people alive in the Antarctic,
right.
definitely, and that's a similar environment. I mean, obviously, there's an atmosphere there, but still.
But we ship them the food, right? Do they raise their own food in Antarctica, or do they? I actually don't know.
I think they do in some respects. I think they grow a lot of what they need, probably with the same systems that we're planning on using. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they get some shipments, of course, but we will as well. We'll be getting supply shipments, you know, humans showing up every 2 years, so...
Oh, okay, between the people coming, there will be shipments of just material that you need?
Yeah, sometimes. I think with the first group, the second group's materials will land just a few weeks after we do.
Oh, okay.
So we'll not only have our systems in duplicate, but we'll have their systems in duplicate as well. So it'll be, you know, extra safe for us. But we'll be setting all that up as well.
Well, One of the things I've been writing about, stuff that's going to show up on the blog eventually, is you know, the future of kind of an open source space program. You know, we got we got people with their 3D printers, we got the Maker movement. I think eventually people are going to be making their own their own launch vehicles and
right.
their own stuff in space. When we get to that point, we'll see if we can't send you some butter. Okay,
that's
that'd be my
point. Much appreciated.
We can't figure out a way to get some butter up there. And probably like some Oreos or just whatever anybody's hungry for. I know
Cheetos, this. Definitely Cheetos. I'm in Japan, and, you know, I'm right here, so.
Oh, you can't get, you
know,
you can't
get Cheetos? We spent a little time, we have spent a little time this evening talking about the using things that are tried and true, but I have to imagine that in the process of getting there, that there's going to be a lot of advancement. I mean, that's the way it was with the moon program. I mean, a lot of the technologies that were needed, of course, you know, they truly were starting with a blank slate. You know, obviously, this program would be leaning a lot on what was learned during those programs, but still. You have to imagine there's going to be a lot of things that would be developed along the way too, in addition to using tried and true. So it's you know it's an exciting thing just for that. You know, I mean, imagine all the things that that could grow out of this, the way going to the moon benefited this.
Yeah, I mean that's the idea too. If people got more excited and a little bit less cynical about it, I think it might help aerospace development overall. You know, people get excited about look. They're really going to do this one way or another, so we need to help them out. Let's build systems. Let's do this, you know, like perfect what we have or make better stuff. I hope that it will revitalize the spirit of exploration overall.
Well, I hope so, too, and it should because, Stephen, you make an excellent point. You know, it's, okay, we'll use existing technology, but it's to do things we've not done before. Yeah, we've sent things to Mars. But this will be the biggest thing we ever sent to Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we've sent people into space, but never this far, right? I mean, all this stuff has occurred, but not like this.
Right.
So it's a new application with primarily existing technologies, which hopefully can leapfrog to some really exciting new technologies. Well,
absolutely.
I think just because, if for no other reason, just because it gets these conversations going. The whole thing is worthwhile. I think there will be a lot more to Mars One than just these conversations. But even if it was just that, right? Even if it was just these guys getting people to talk about going to Mars, I think it's probably worthwhile. So let's just for a moment, if you don't get a go to Mars, what are you going to do?
Well, if I don't get to go to Mars, I'll have 8 years of astronaut training behind me, so I'm pretty sure I'll end up working in space sooner or later.
That's true.
Awesome.
I guess they'll be training people who will have skills that others will want to snatch up because the private development of space is on its way.
Exactly, and I think that may be one option for Mars One. If it doesn't pan out, I mean, you're looking at 24 fully trained astronauts for hire, and that's a bigger program than any of the current space programs aside from NASA and I believe the Russian Space Agency. So, you know, they'd be sending us out, I guess, doing all kinds of things, education and also maybe perhaps missions to the ISS ourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, you'd know a lot about how to train astronauts. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm not, I'm not cutting off my entire life in order to do this. It's part of my life. This is how I'm like looking at it. This is an incredible adventure one way or another.
Absolutely.
You know,
well, it's certainly...
Phil, we need to get her back on the show sometime to talk about online education. That's a fascinating area as well, and that's the current way you're earning your living these days. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's my current job. So.
Well, there you go. Okay, so I'll tell you what, Sabrina. Here's what we're going to do. We're just about out of time.
Oh,
so what we'll do is. I know. It always goes by fast when we're talking to interesting people about interesting things.
Well, thank you.
Virtually every week. But this, especially a subject near and dear to us, going to Mars. Let's meet back up in a few months or a year or so and see where you are with this thing. And we'll also take some time and learn more about what you do with your day job. I guess we've only learned about the superhero life of Sabrina. We need to...
Well, if I get chosen, hopefully that'll be the case. We're supposed to know, I guess, by the end of this year who will be the final 24.
Okay, by the end of this year. I'll tell you what, we're going to check back in and see how it's going, and let's plan on having you back on sometime soon. In the meantime, Sabrina, thank you so much for being with us, and all the best to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, Stephen, remind me what our music is called tonight. Oh, I know. It's called Ecstasy by Smiling Cynic.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, I
just... Instrumental tonight. Yeah, cool. Go for it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Stephen, for putting that together. Thanks once again to our guest, and thank you all for being with us. We'll be back with a brand-new show again next week. We're going back to weekly, Stephen. This bi-weekly thing was killing us. We're going to do it every week. And until next time, live to see it.